Back then, I was a quitter. I was a liar. I was a thief. I was a user and abuser. I mean, everything negative that you could think of, I probably fell under it. And by all accounts, even by my own hand, I revoked my right to be here. Yet plans changed, I guess. And it became clear to me in that paradigm shift of a moment that there's something pulling strings somewhere. I don't know what. And that's coming from someone that's a relative non-believer type person. I walked away from God on May 3rd of 2011 and never looked back. I saw an individual when we captured the most wanted criminal in the history of mankind, and then he wound up with two holes in his face in front of his family and children. Even that, it was a moment of like, wow, we got the evil guy, but now to these people, we are that evil.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Kyrie. Kyrie J. Soraya is a transgender United States Air Force intelligence and special operations veteran. She has been featured in articles discussing the healing power of gaming and streaming for veterans with PTSD and or MST. Kyrie is a Twitch streamer who uses a platform to connect with other veterans and create a supportive community. Her story has been highlighted in articles such as those from Brainline and News Nation Now, which emphasize the role of video games in reducing veteran suicide rates and providing a sense of purpose, camaraderie, and support for veterans struggling with mental health issues. Kyrie J. Soraya's experiences demonstrate the positive impact that gaming and streaming can have on the lives of veterans dealing with PTSD and MST. Kyrie, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So we connected and I heard a snippet of your story, and your story to me is just incredible. And I've read, snippets online. I've read the articles about you. I did some background research on you, and it's incredible what you have overcame and what you have created. So I would love to just pass it off to you to hear your story from you.
Sure. Where do you even begin? I enlisted when I was 17. So I'm 31 at the date of this recording right now. Enlisted at 17, shipped out when I was 18. My career was relatively short. I didn't wind up serving the entirety of my 6-year obligation. Got out honorably discharged a little early. And after that, I went on to have an MMA career of all things. And was pretty good at that too. I don't have any losses to account for, but that kind of lost its luster too in the search for how do you search for something if you don't even know what you're looking for? And I was searching for something and I didn't know what it was, but it wasn't that. After that, I experienced some homelessness post-service. I was awarded with a divorce, which was, it was mutually agreeable. It wasn't anything like you hear about the horror stories of the ex taking everything. Or, I got a cat out of the divorce. He's still kicking, so that's pretty sweet. But yeah, I had the homeless stay. And then in that homelessness, I started to develop a pretty serious addiction to alcohol. That became a battle that I fought every day for 8.5 years. I mean, God, there's so many years lost. Most of my 20s were lost to the sauce. And I went through multiple rehabs, programs, groups, NA, AA, UA, MEA, whatever, and, a couple times of getting arrested, jail stays. I mean, just everywhere that's supposed to fix you, but nothing made things better. And that battle that I was fighting, I ultimately lost on the night of December 21st in 2020. That night, after 8.5 years of rampant alcohol abuse and a serious decline in mental health, I put a loaded weapon in my mouth and pulled the trigger. And clearly, things didn't pan out the way I had intended that night. I'm a marksman. I can handle a weapon proficiently. I can handle it efficiently. I can veritably tell you it was loaded. One in the chamber, everything ready to go, semi-automatic, and just click. And I don't know why, but here we are. After that, I kind of broke down and just, I was like, dude, I can't even do this right. Like, what is the deal? I was so tired. I was so tired of chasing a dragon, and I didn't even know what that dragon looked like. But in the rehabs that I had gone through, I was taught that you shouldn't chase the dragon. And I submit to you that that is bullshit, because I caught it. I caught that dragon after the fact. And I don't want to skip too far ahead in the story, but peace is possible. That's the main takeaway from any of this that I would hope anyone listening can consider. Peace is possible. If somebody like myself could find it, I assure you, you can too. Now, this is not to disparage myself. This isn't how I feel about me now. This is just objectively true. Back then, I was a quitter. I was a liar. I was a thief. I was a user and abuser. I mean, everything negative that you could think of, I probably fell under it. And by all accounts, even by my own hand, I revoked my right to be here. Yet plans changed, I guess. And it became clear to me in that paradigm shift of a moment that there's something pulling strings somewhere. I don't know what. And that's coming from someone that's a relatively non-believer type person. I walked away from God on May 3rd of 2011 and never looked back when I saw, well, I won't drop the names there because I was definitely about to, but I saw an individual, when we captured the most wanted criminal in the history of mankind, and then he wound up with two holes in his face in front of his family and children. Even that, it was a moment of like, wow, we got the evil guy, but now to these people, we are that evil. It just, so anyways, that's tangential. It became clear that something more is going on. And if you came to me and said what it is, I think it's love. I don't know. That's the best way I can quantify it so far. Some sort of entity or aspect out there, but we won't get into the spiritual realm just yet. After I pulled the trigger, I broke down. I laid on the floor right here where I am for about 2 days. I gathered myself up, took a shower, got cleaned up, and I basically said, fuck it. I mean, if you got nothing left, you got nothing left to lose. So let's just go for whatever. And for about 7 years at that point, I wanted to try out streaming. I got to the point where I got rid of cable. I only watched streaming and streamers. That was my entertainment. And I knew the odds of going into that and how stacked they were against me. And I'm an individual that when I apply myself, I don't fail, but I didn't think I would be able to succeed in this. But at that point, it was like, whatever. So I booted up a stream, got it all set up, figured out how to do it all, and named the stream title Test Stream. Was going to go live for like, 20 minutes just to see the functionality of it. I wound up streaming for 4 hours. And to this day, from December 23rd of 2020 to the date now, which is June 8th, 2023, that day I met two individuals that are still friends with me to this very moment. I just played Fortnite with them earlier, of all things. in that streaming, I started to dive into the world of mental health. I was looking for an angle. I was looking for a gimmick, something that would get my stream that distinction over the 2 million other streamers that are live at any given moment on Twitch. And it just played out the way it did. Looking back, I would have called it serendipity, but that can only happen so many times before it's abundantly clear that these people were put in my life by design, because they were people that were therapists, people that were mental health advocates, people that were in the nonprofit industry. I got into streaming wanting to be the big time streamer guy. I had no plans of being nonprofit streamer girl. None of that was on the agenda. Over the course of about 6 months and having various guests on, I got pretty well versed in the almost Joe Rogan-esque format of just being inquisitive. I just wanted to know more. I wanted to explore the mind and intimately understand it. I had spent 29 years alone in my head, and finally I had somewhere where I could just broadcast it, even if it's just into the void. It's getting it out of my head and into reality. So I did just that, and it started to foster a community around it. People were drawn to it because I would get emotionally butt naked in front of everyone and say, guys, this is where I'm fucked up and I don't know how to fix it. I need something. I don't know what. So I eventually did get to the point where I've started picking away at the mask that I had worn for 29 years. Picking it away piece by piece, stream by stream, because I didn't even know who I was at this point. I had no identity. I had no sense of self. I lost it all along the journey, if I ever had it to begin with. And when that mask was finally broken apart, I looked around and realized, wow, I have a community of people. It wasn't anything massive. I won't throw out metrics, but it was a good sized community of people that depended on me and relied on me and expected me to be there to show up. And I tell you, I am a person that shows up. Period. If it's expected of me, I will accomplish it. So I just dove in to helping others while I helped myself. So much solace was found in service to others. And that was a first for me. I had been selfish my whole life. I had done something nice for people before, like done a nice gesture or something. But it just wasn't from here. It was from here. And for the listeners, it was from the head, not the heart. And everything changed when I started getting in tune with my heart. That's what it really was. Picking away at that mask was taking away that defensive barrier I had put up in front of my heart by, going through different traumatic experiences and things of that nature. When you get traumatized, you tend to say, fuck that. That sucked. I don't want anything to do with that ever again. But I've started to realize, like, I had to face these painful thoughts. I had to face these memories, these things I was running from. And I came to a conclusion through the help of a clinical psychologist, and not one for me, but just somebody that I met through streaming who was also a streamer. And I would vet my ideas through them because I didn't ever want to get on there and purport myself to be like a mental health expert or a psychiatrist or psychologist or a therapist. I would vet the ideas, and they taught me the most valuable thing I think I've learned in this journey. And it was one line, and it was, therapy does not have to take place in a therapist office. And I was like, well, yeah, duh. Wait. Whoa. Once it finally clicked, I was like, oh, hold up. So it was therapy for me. I was journaling through streaming, and it was therapeutic. And for the first time in my life, I felt unconditional love, not from viewers that loved an idea of me, but people that genuinely knew me And, even when I would try to push away and tell them worse and worse things about me or things I've done, these people that were in the chat of the stream, they'd say things like, that's fucked up, but we still love you. That in and of itself was the panacea to all my problems. It just knowing that I was loved, not for what I did, but for who I am. That changed everything. I continued on that journey of mental health and streaming. And at about a year in, I said, things were popping off at this point. The stream was going crazy. The growth was exponential. But I started to not care about being big time streamer guy. I wanted something more. I wanted something that was, when I laid in that bed at night, something I could think about and be like, damn, I can really hang my hat on that. Because I never felt like that for anything I'd done in my life either. Not my military service, not my MMA career, not being a father, which I still am a father, by the way. For the listeners, my voice betrays my appearance because I am transgender. We'll get into all that because I had no clue I was transgender until about 2 years ago. That's kind of a whole tangential story as well. So I guess this would be a good point to stay linear in the timeline because we're at about a year in to streaming. And this was when I had a Discord server. My name on Twitch was JCard. So the server was called JCard's Community Toilet. Like it was just a big joke, it wasn't anything serious. But one day, I don't know, I just woke up and was like, I want to get serious. And I came up with this wild hair in my ass of, dude, let's do like a organization or something. Let's become something. Let's do like a nonprofit. They don't even deal with money, right? Like that should be super easy. Wrong. God, I was so wrong. But I was fortunate to be educated otherwise over the time. And right around that same time, I had somebody from the gaggle of the community come to me that I had been helping, I'd been working with consistently for a couple months now. These people were my friends. And this my friend came to me and said, Jay, I can't go on like this anymore. And I was kind of taken aback because I'd been working specifically with her intensively, and she had really turned her life around. Like things were going good. You could hear it in her voice and interactions. You could just see the improvement. And she comes at me sideways with I can't go on. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I'll use a fake name in this story, for all intents and purposes. This person said to me, I'm in my older ages, over 50. My family will never understand or accept this. But my whole life, I've been Danielle, yet I've felt like a Dan. And my response was, what? Like, I don't get it. Because the way I helped people with not having any formal training in psychology aside from my studies extracurricularly, I would empathize with people and put myself in their shoes, but then remove the emotion from it and objectively analyze the situation. Something that most people lack the ability to do if it's something directly affecting them. Because you're supposed to feel appropriate emotions. When something's shitty, you're supposed to feel shitty. I had the luxury of being able to be like, wow, this is a really shitty situation. And then whoosh, dissociate from that and be like, all right, how do we get out of this? So I had been doing that with her. I could not empathize with her on being trans. I was like, I don't get it. How can I help that if I don't understand it? I mean, I knew what transgender was. It wasn't like a new concept. It just, I don't know. How can you imagine that if you don't experience it? And I still feel like that's true to this day for people that, if you meet a trans person, I mean, you're not supposed to understand because you can't. Most likely, it just matters whether or not you accept them for who they are, not what they are, because that I think gender is kind of irrelevant. I did this because I have the freedom to do it, and that's the freedom I fought for. The night that she came to me and said, "I can't go on like this," I was like, I don't know how to help you." And that broke my heart. That I felt like such a failure in that. And I don't owe her anything. I'm not here. I don't have to help nobody. But I've put myself in this position of becoming like a helper. And I dwelled and dwelled and dwelled on it, and I thought and thought and thought for the next 24 hours, and I came up with an idea. And I called my girl Kelly, and I said, "Kelly, I know you live 45 minutes away, but I need a favor. I need you to turn me into a woman." And she goes, "I bet." She got here in 30 minutes flat. Like, she had all the makeup. She brought the wig. She had like the go bag ready for this. And my idea was I was going to go live dressed as a woman, right? I wasn't going to tell anyone or warn them. I wasn't going to have any precursors or soften the blow. I was just going to show up, and I'm just going to be, because I am undeniable. I exist. So the concept I had in my head was like, yeah, some people might have a problem with it, but they're probably not the right people to have around. So the right ones will stay, the wrong ones will go. She can be he. That shit is irrelevant to the big picture. Just be. Kelly does my makeup. I'm sitting here, kind of giggling like a dude typically would, I think. Well, dude, he's about to turn me into a woman, dude. It's gonna be so funny. And she throws the wig on me. I go down the hallway to go to the bathroom and look in the mirror. And I turned the corner, I saw myself, and I was like, whoa. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm hot shit. I am, but that wasn't it. It was a feeling. It was a really, really strange feeling, but it felt so comfortable and so familiar. But I like, you know what sadness feels like. You know what happiness feels like. You know what stubbing your toe feels like. These are feelings that you know, but I don't know what this feeling is or how to interpret it or anything. It just kind of washed over me, and I basically was just like, skirt, put that on the shelf. I don't know what to do with that. We'll deal with that later because I got a stream to do. And you already know when I turned that stream on and that just starting or starting soon screen rolled over and my camera turned on. I'm sitting there like this. I was so scared. I was horrified. Every part of me wanted to like message one of my besties and be like, "Dude, this is what I'm about to do. If it goes south, just act like it was a joke with me. You're in on it." But I didn't, because it wouldn't have been true. I wanted to see if I had it in me to be true to myself for once. So I did it. And then you fuck around and find out you might wind up transgender, because goddamn, that wasn't the plan. But that camera turned on. I'm sitting here like this. I'm like, and the chat is like, "Hey, yo, who's this? Where's Jay? What's up?" And then I leaned in and I went, "Yo." Hit him with that deep voice, like I've been up in them birdhouses all day.
Your friend did such a good job on your makeup that they didn't even recognize you.
Yeah. They were like, "Who is this?" I mean,
Impressive.
have I ever showed you a picture of me like from the before time?
You posted one on your Facebook the other day, actually, because it was a beginning of COVID
Yeah.
to now. So I saw that.
If you had seen those two people, would you think that they are the same person?
I mean, I can see similarities, but I think that's just because they're side by sides. And so it's easy to see the similarities there, but I don't know. That's a hard one to answer because I didn't experience that.
The arc de triomphe of the whole attire was my attache of hair, the wig. It was this beautiful blonde wig, and it was parted in the middle and went down because I had short hair. I had short dude hair at the time. And I think that's what really made people like, what? But what was really cool was I leaned in, I hit him with that yo, and they're like, ah, what's up, dude? What are we playing tonight? That was it. Nobody gave a fuck. It didn't matter. It was inconsequential. She now lives his life as he, and I had some thinking to do and some soul searching of what the hell was that feeling. So there I was, left with a weird feeling. It was almost like an alien feeling, like a non-human emotion or something. I don't know. The best way to this day I can describe it is a foreign and discomforting familiar comfort. That's the best I can come up with so far. And I was like, what the fuck was that? And over the next like 3 months on stream in front of everyone to see, we explored that too because I'm not stopping there. Can't stop, won't stop, I guess. But I spent the next 3 months every stream, day in and day out, inquisitive to myself. And it took introspection and objective analysis of really cataloging my feelings. The problem I ran into was I could probably remember on two hands my total amount of memories from 1 to 18. And for those that don't know, that's a symptom of extreme childhood trauma, the repression and blacking out of a lot of things. I had my fair share of it. And that's not to be like, whoa, it's me. It is what it is. So I couldn't remember a lot. And I started to have this memory like come back in pieces. It was a memory of, I need to preface that with even the memories I do have, they're blurry. I couldn't tell you details. I couldn't tell you who, what, when, where, why. I just kind of can vaguely remember a concept of like snowboarding. This memory came back to me fragmented over a few days as I'm doing this introspection and analysis of myself. I grew up heavily indoctrinated in a particular religion, and that religion said that it was not okay to be gay, right? And so I saw how my family had talked and acted about my closest relative, who was my cousin, who came out as gay at a very young age. And so I had this deeply ingrained fear of being gay. But at this point, I was like, dude, please let me be gay. Like, what is this? I don't know what's like, I'll take it at this point. But I knew I wasn't because as a guy, I had already experimented and experienced men sexually, just to see and find out. And for my ladies out there, I'm still in the lady game because, I was gonna like take it or leave it. And it didn't really do anything for me. But yeah, so. Those I just kind of like fried my own brain. I don't know what that was. Where was I in the story? I've been doing the introspection, the analysis. I had a couple of guests on, people that were trans, people that were anti-trans, because I started to kind of gather what the hell it was, at the like in the third month, and I would just ask questions like, "How did you know? Did you know your whole life? What is dysphoria? What is dysmorphia?" And I never experienced gender dysphoria. To this day, I never have. I never felt like I was anatomically incorrect or anything. Not to be like crass, but I've always enjoyed having a penis. It's like, who wouldn't? It's fun. So I don't know. It was I just couldn't pin my finger on it. Am I like, was it a kink thing? Was it a Do I just think I'm hot? Am I selfish and self-absorbed? Like, what was it? And over that third month, it finally clicked. And my exact words when I realized like every other option was exhausted. And I said, fucking shit, dudes. Turns out I'm transgender. Like I had no idea. And I just dove in head first from that point on. The DSM-5 states that you don't have to experience gender dysphoria to fall under transgenderism. And so I did have a lot of the classic markers though of like trying to do overly masculine things, trying to grow my beard, knowing I can't or shouldn't. Just all the markers that I would come to. And what a wild thing at 29 years old to be like, huh, turns out I feel more like a woman than I do a man. How, what do you do with that? I can tell you what you do. You get that makeup game on point, get you some nice dresses, and you ball out. So that's how I got to be looking the way I look. After that point, the nonprofit, we were in the waiting phase of the nonprofit. We had filed for 501c3 status at this point in August 21. And I was expecting the next, year to go by because we were at the height of COVID. Things are moving slow. It's the IRS. I was going to take that expected year of return and learn everything I could nonprofit. Everything. The shock callers, the puppet masters of my life said, nah, you can have 3 months because we got that shit back in December. 501c3 determination. Here you go. Rock and roll, dude. And I was like, oh my God, I am not ready for this at all. But we had to be because that's what happens when you have mission critical elements and time sensitive nature. You don't rise to an occasion, you fall back on your training. And that's exactly what I did. What limited training I had, and continued to train under the guidance of beautiful people in my life that took me under their wings, that were professionals in this world. And I developed and blossomed into an executive in the nonprofit industry. Thus was founded Veterans Gaming and Mental Health Mission. And I know the title, well, to me at least, the name of the organization sounds almost like the Department of Caffeinated Beverage Distribution or something like, but I did that by design because I know that there, at this point, I learned there was other gaming mental health organizations out there for veterans. Had I known that going into it, I probably would have just joined one rather than start one. I thought I was revolutionary. I thought I was doing something nobody had done before. Like, oh, what an idea. I would like to give one particular shout out, if that's okay, to a
Yeah,
person by name.
absolutely.
This man probably has no clue how much he directly influenced and affected my life in a positive manner. He is the executive director of an organization that I adore. For veterans, mental health, and gaming. They're called Stack Up, and his name is Steve Machuga. He took me, I inadvertently wound up in front of him, like stumbling through this. One conversation led to another conversation with someone else. And then 15 minutes later, I'm sitting in front of him, and the first words out of his mouth are, so what are you going to do? Just copy Stack Up? And I was like, no, I didn't even know you existed 2 hours ago. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. But I think it clicked with him when I was just sincere. Like, I just want to help. I'd like to add a side note that at this time, I had found empirical evidence that the VA was misreporting the amount of daily veteran suicides. Underreporting by a pretty large margin. Brown University did a 20-year study that started right after 9/11 and concluded in June 21, called this, it was by a gentleman named Sweet, Suitt, so Sweet Cost of War, the real cost of war. And in that, they had citations and proof and documentation that the daily number at that time was 27 veterans a day, not 17 that the VA was reporting. A couple of problems with that. Those lives matter. For the VA to try to save face in order to have a lower number and say that they're effectively combating the suicide crisis that we're in, which is exactly what it is, a suicide crisis. Get this. In that 20 years that we spent in the desert, for every person that died overseas, every single one, count them all, for every one of those, four have died at home from suicide after the fact. And now it's 1 to 5 ratio. That is unbelievable. That's astronomical. That's unacceptable. And I didn't ask to be on this planet. I didn't ask to be here. But I found the planet the way it in sh the shape it's in. And I was determined at this point to take this new lease on life and change the world for the better and leave it a better place than the way I found it. And I genuinely believe I'm capable of doing that. And I think that I may already have, but I'm not done. There is, let me, before I go into that, I want to circle back to Steve. I want to finish my shout out for Steve. So, and this is for the soundbite. I'm going to repeat kind of what I said. But this man has no idea how much he like influenced positively in my life and set an example and inspired me. And he was kind of a dick when we first met, and I loved him for it. But after he said, "So what are you gonna do? Just copy stack up?" I was like, no. He says, "All right, well, let's talk about your mission statement." You know, he starts to get into the finer details of a nonprofit. And I had this long, wordy, to bring awareness to the veteran suicide crisis, blah, 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 blah. It was like way long. And he goes, "I'm gonna stop you right there. You realize awareness doesn't do shit, right?" And I was like, "What? What is this, the roast of J Card? Like, what is going on?" And then I thought about it. It was J Card still at the time, by the way, side note, because I was in between. I was still kind of transitioning into the transition. So, like for stream, I would dress presenting and stuff, but it was kind of compartmentalized into that. But it clicked with me after thinking about it. And I was like, oh my God, he's right. Like, awareness is a piece of the puzzle, but by itself, it does nothing. I think it's important to note that as it currently stands right now, the daily amount of veteran suicides has almost doubled since my discovery of the Sweet Cost of War expose, if you will. I mean, it was just a study, but I call it an expose. The number as it stands right now is 44 veterans a day. That's 44 of me, 44 of you, 44 people every day that matter, that have a point to be here and a purpose and a reason to be here and bring value into this world. People that answered the call, whether it was to get your GI Bill, to serve your country, whatever, you answered that call. You signed that blank check and you said, "I'm willing to give up to and including my life and service to this country so that the person next to me can enjoy the freedoms that they enjoy." 44 of them every day are committing suicide. We're aware of that now. And nothing changed. You know, that. So once that clicked with me, I was like, he is right. Like, awareness doesn't do shit. So I really had to go back to the drawing board in a pretty intense way and really reevaluate everything, because like I was just doing generic nonprofit type thinking. And what I needed to do was create something that didn't exist yet. Because no, hell no, I'm not going to copy Stack Up. I'm not going to copy the other organizations out there. I will take pages out of their book for inspiration, but they will be my muse and nothing more. And that's exactly what I did. Fast forward to a little bit in the future. I've been getting counsel and guidance from people much more educated than I am in this field. And I started to tap into my intuition. That was a first for me. At I'm 30 at this point. I had had gut feelings before, but this was something like on a totally different level. And at this point, I was taking hormones, and so at the time, I attested it to women's intuition. But I think I was incorrect in that. I don't think there is such thing as women's intuition or men's intuition. I think there is just intuition. I think that women are more inclined to be in tune with it as they are more emotional creatures. And that is what happened with me. I got more in tune with my emotions, and then I got more in tune with my intuition. And that intuition told me, like, when I'm thinking of ideas of how to make this organization, in my head, it was five detachments, like all military nomenclature, military jargon. We'd have five detachments under VGMH, each one specializing, because that's what a detachment does, a specialized unit that has a specific fight to fight. And that's what they were going to be. So detachment one was the hill that I was willing to die on. It was MST and PTSD support. So MST, for those that don't know, is military sexual trauma. That's right. There's enough sexual assault in the military that they have their own name for it. You ever heard of it? Doubt it, because it's been swept under the rug, just like the girl that was murdered at Fort Hood. Like that one?
You're not wrong. Not wrong.
The reason I wanted to die on that, I don't want to die on that hill, but was willing to, was in the journey I was on, I came across a individual, a young lady who was a veteran. She had combat trauma and PTSD from that. And it did not hold a candle to how much her military sexual trauma had negatively impacted her life. And it dawned on me, like, I thought I had it bad. Not that one's worse than the other, but like this, she was fucked up from her MST. And for educational purposes, MST is not a diagnosis, it is an experience. But it's often correlated with PTSD because after sexual assault, you tend to have, de you tend to develop symptoms. The thing about MST, the really tricky part is that it's oftentimes in the chain of command that you're in that the perpetrator commits the act. So, who do you call when the police are the ones that rape you? I mean, you talk about feeling helpless. You can't just walk away. You can't just quit. You have to show up, or you go to Leavenworth, and you have to face the people that violated you every day. That's not okay, and we needed to talk about it. I would have so much more respect for the military if they would be like, "Look, we know we got a problem. We're gonna fix it, and this is how and why, whatever." But no, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to acknowledge it. I will acknowledge that because that young lady who watched her spouse perish overseas when they were deployed together and was almost relatively unfazed by it, because in that same deployment she was assaulted. How helpless can you be? You're in a foreign country. You cannot call anyone. You have no one. And then 9 times out of 10, if you do bring it up, they'll gaslight the shit out of you and then kick you out of the military and tell you you're a liar because the person doing it had a higher rank and authority. That's not okay. Tenure does not exist in the military. It should not. I was fortunate enough to not have ever experienced MST myself. Not to Not to say I did not ever experience sexual trauma, but God, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine. So I'm really passionate about that one. That was our first detachment. Second detachment was gaming and streaming outreach. So this is where it all ties together in the name. Gaming was the bridge that crossed the gaps to make connections that would otherwise never be made. Had I not been gaming, I would have never met you. Had I not been gaming, I would have not met all these beautiful people and these wonderful souls on this planet. So that's the bridge of the connection. And after that, we take it a step farther. We make those connections, and then we foster an environment that promotes healing by offering a safe space to share your unique struggles. Because every person who is traumatized needs to understand this. Your trauma is no better or worse than the person next to you. There is no scale or metric for trauma. It either is or isn't. Trauma is trauma is trauma. There's no peeing farther. And I also submit to you for consideration the divide that exists in the veteran community, where veterans have the mentality of like, I can't talk to a civilian because they won't get it. That's ridiculous. They don't have to get it. They just have to care. That's the difference. Because nobody will ever get it except you, as it happened to you. If you and another soldier side by side witness the same traumatic thing, both of you have unique experiences because you have your own unique perspective, and it's going to manifest differently in both of you, if at all. Soldier one could be unfazed while soldier two devolves into a raging addict because they can't come to terms with the reality of what they've witnessed. That was me. You can't run forever from those feelings. I can tell you, with no accreditation or degree, I can tell you that any psychologist would back me up on this. If you are repressing and fighting feelings from traumatic experiences and you're running from them, they will catch you every time. The problem in that is, we often run and run and run until we cannot run anymore. And we fall face first, fall down metaphorically, and then they all catch you at once. And in those moments, the only thing that seems to make sense is just putting that loaded weapon in your mouth, because there's no way to rationalize this. It's too much. But the good news is, if you turn around and face those demons, not with the absence of fear, but regardless of it, face them piece by piece, thought by thought, feel them in order to deal with them so that you can heal from them. I know it's true because it worked for me, and it has worked for countless others since I built a scalable model of myself to support other veterans. In our 2-year span at VGMH, we have KPIs that indicate over 60 lives in 1 year were intervened upon in a time of crisis. That's in 1 year. The first year, we don't have accurate metrics on because we didn't have the systems in place yet. So I had to develop all these things without any knowledge on how to do it. So the first year, who knows? But we've lost people too. I've lost too many in this journey. Some directly affected by my actions. I wouldn't change it for a heartbeat. I wish they were still here with us, but I did not kill them. They did. I tried my best, and I like to think that the lives that were affected by initially my work, which became our work, those lives are almost like ripples in a pond, right? You throw a pebble into a pond and it makes ripples outward. And those ripples are going to go until they reach the end and dissipate. And that is the time and space that we live in, those ripples are the effect that those lives have on other lives and humanity as a whole. So for each and every life saved is another stone in the water, making more ripples and more ripples and more ripples. And in that logic, I do believe that I have made a impact on mankind. Because one life, look at what one life can do. Every hero that you've ever heard of, every great person, every individual that has gone down in history was exactly that one person. Not to say they didn't have help, but they were one person. You have the power and the capability, the potential to change this world to whatever design your heart desires. You just got to try. Will you succeed? I don't fucking know. I'd like to think so in some way that you find solace in. But all that matters is your intent. Your intentionality is everything. So you try. You just try your best. Some days I try 5%. Some days I try 110%, but I'm still trying. And I think the most important time of day in every human's life is when you lay in that bed and there's no one else there. The talking has stopped. There's nothing between your eyeballs and your eyelids except the darkness and your thoughts. And in that moment, you know the truth. You know what is right and wrong and fact and not fact. We've all lied before, and we've all been aware of lying. So you know truths to be true. And in those moments, I think that is where I found the most solace of being able to put my head on that pillow, close my eyes, and be like, yeah, hell yeah. Instead of, oh God, it's so horrible and everything is spinning. It's crazy to me how different it is in my own head. And I further submit to people, for the listeners out there, to consider the following. There is one perspective that exists, and it's mine. That is also true for your perspective, because there is no way you can have another person's full perspective unless you are them. So theoretically, of course, multiple perspectives can exist, but objectively, there is but one, and it's yours. So take that to heart. And if you're struggling, just know that all it takes is a shift in perspective for everything to change. If this is your planet and this is your frame or your field of view, you see everything this way, right? When I put that gun in my mouth and I pulled that trigger, everything shifted. Because I was like, oh shit, I don't want to be dead. I didn't know if I was dead for about a minute and a half. My ears went out. I couldn't hear anything. And I was just kind of like waiting. Like, what happens now? That was a forced perspective shift, but it doesn't take that level of dramatic and traumatic kind of incident to do it.
So just to clarify, when you pulled that trigger, the gun went off. It didn't just jam and stop. I mean, obviously you said that your ears were ringing, so there was some kind of.
There was no blast that it did not fire. My
Okay.
ears went out because I was preparing for, I mean, who knows if you hear the last shot when you're killing yourself, but
Gotcha.
I
Okay.
was expecting the shot. I have tinnitus. Shout out to the VA for my DBQ exam dated April 19th, 2019, that shows recurrent tinnitus, yet they still denied my claim. Thank you. I was ready for that shot, and I think it was just like a physiological response. It was psychological, of just like all I could hear was the blood rushing in my head. Going back to perspective, if your life as you feel it right now, if it sucks, I'm not telling you, just be happy, dude. Just like, but I am kind of telling you that at the same moment, you have power in your life. You have choice, which gives you dominion over everything. And the moment you choose to start trying for better is the moment the perspective starts to shift. And then you start to see things in a different light. It takes time. It's a process or a transition, if you will. So don't expect it to happen overnight or instantly. I was just fortunate that the gun, one, didn't fire, and two, forced a perspective shift. It was, for me, it was more like a complete paradigm shift of like, you know what? Maybe it ain't so bad because clearly I still want to be here. That there, I keep trying to harp on it because it is the key to resolving your mental health issues. Perspective, the way you look at things. I was getting ready to go to the store yesterday, and then I remembered, fuck, one of my cars is in the shop. My roommate's got the other car, and so I've got to walk to the fucking store. It's a billion degrees outside, and I don't like going out as it stands because people bother me. they try to talk to me and stuff, and I'm like, ugh. I was walking to the store out in the sunlight, and I was like, ugh, kind of trudging. Walking a little fast paced, and then I was like, hold up. Perspective, my chick. I slowed down and I looked up at the clouds in the sky, and I was like, it really is a nice day out. It's a little warm, but it's a beautiful day, and I want to enjoy it. I forced a perspective shift in that moment. Something so simple as that. If you can do it on that level, then you can do it on the grandest of levels. And so, like, depression, anxiety, all those things, they can be significantly alleviated by learning how to control your perspective. When it comes to depression and anxiety, again, I'm not saying don't be sad, dude. You should be sad sometimes. That's an appropriate emotion. The reason you're sad all the time, you're not depressed, you're feeling and you don't know how to feel it. We're not taught how to feel. We don't get equipped with that going through school. We get equipped on how to produce for the oligarchs in control. So we are unequipped from a generation before us of people that also did not know how to feel most of the time. And in most circumstances, maybe that's, conjecture just based on my cognitive bias, but in my experience, I have seen not only in my life, but countless others, they have had the same sort of sentiment.
So the thing that really stood out to me about the gaming thing is that there is this idea, I mean, this has been a theme on my podcast lately, is this idea that there are multiple modalities of therapy that the military just isn't, they're not up to speed or something. I don't know. When you look at a lot of people in the military, there's a lot of people that game. When people go on deployments, when they go on detachments, when they go home from work at the end of the day, and it's really just kind of seen as like, oh, this is just what we do. I mean, everyone had a Nintendo Switch at one of my last commands in the Navy. In your time that you've been so immersed in what you do between gaming and working with the veteran community, have you seen any shifts in the military taking on this form of therapy for anyone? I
No.
mean,
No,
do you
they
see that
can't.
happening?
I don't think they can. Had I gone through the process of facing my demons in service, I would not have been an effective combatant because I would have been resolving these feelings. Some of those feelings are really, really nasty feelings when you have to sit there and tell yourself that life can never be brought back. You did that, and nothing can change that. And they should not have died. So, when you have those types of thoughts and those feelings, and if you start to resolve them, you're going to have that paradigm shift of this is wrong because war is inherently wrong. It's a necessary evil, they call it. But this war that we were in specifically, I won't tangent on that. I don't have to cite why. I mean, those two planes that flew into three buildings somehow and started the whole operation. I mean, all of it was fucked up, top to bottom. We shouldn't have been there in the first place. So then, when horrible things happen and you come to that revelation, it shatters your veil of reality. If you do that to fighters, you take their gaming and take it instead of being an escape, which is what it is in the military, and use it as a tool to start getting better. You have to be a little sick to fight. If you fully get better, you can't fight. You're not going to pull that trigger. You're going to hesitate for that half a second, and that person on the other end is going to get the upper hand when they fire back because they will shoot first. So I don't think they can. And I think that's
Yeah,
why they won't.
that's an interesting perspective, because when I served, I wasn't serving in this in a combat role, or even in, I mean, I can't say in support of, because I think that I was always in support of some kind of operation that was
You
going on.
were.
That's just the
If you had
military
a
in general,
uniform,
right?
that's what it was.
Right. And I met people who were more immersed in what was going on than I was. I was in maintenance. So, I fixed the plane, I sent the plane off, plane comes back, I fixed the plane. It was that repetition every day. But there were people that were on that plane that saw things that I never got to see, because it was a reconnaissance squadron that I was part of, right?
I
And
was
so they
recon.
did. So, I mean, you understand that part, right? Where it's like some people might have those second thoughts or those feelings. And I know people that have had those second thoughts of like, man, like what I am doing is contributing to people losing their lives. But if I don't do what I do, then people also lose their lives. So I see what you're saying from that standpoint of like, it they're weird with the therapy thing. But I feel like, and I mean, this would be a whole other tangent, so maybe not something to get into right now, but
We'll do it for part two if
yeah.
if it goes over well enough.
Yeah, I mean, but something for active duty to just help, like,
Ketamine.
yeah. You think ketamine?
No.
No?
I know there is therapeutic uses to it, but I just think it's funny because like ketamine is
Yeah,
such a wild drug.
I get ads on my Facebook
Yeah.
all the time for it, but I also get ads for all kinds of psychedelics, and because I'm a mental health advocate, right? So they're gonna throw all the mental health things at me on my Facebook ads all the time. But I just, I'm always trying to talk through solutions with the guests that I have on the podcast of what they think might work for active duty too, because I think the veteran side is one battle, the active duty side is another battle, and then the reservist side is a whole other battle that I can't even relate to because I've never been in the reserve. So,
I think I could give you some insight to a solution, a possible one. Because if you can't change the fighter in the fighting, I mean, you have to have killers if you're doing what we're doing. That moment where you're like, "Are we the baddies?" That's when you put that PT on in your mind, and you PT the shit out of it and run from that shit and continue being an effective fighter. It's hindsight is when it gets you. Complete, top to bottom, dismantle the VA and make something new. The VA was founded and funded by General, don't quote me on this. I think it's General MacArthur, and the Bonus Army. Have you ever heard of this? We're gonna get real podcasty right now.
I was Googling the history of the VA while you're talking, so continue talking because I'm
Sure.
curious.
The Bonus Army was a bunch of World War I veterans that were promised a bonus for enlisting and fighting for their country. They go off, they fight a horrendous war, a trench warfare. They come back to an impoverished nation and a depression like we've never seen, and there's no money. So the bonuses are not being paid. And that's not okay. That's a failure on behalf of our government. So we had to march on Washington. Lives were lost in this. And after the fact, that's when they came up with, well, maybe we should make something for the veterans. So let's make an insurance company that'll deny every claim so we can have, just denial plausible deniability, but we can say, look, we're trying and we're sorry. But they're not. They're not even sorry. That's the worst part, because they were founded in something so horrible.
Yeah, I started to look up the history, and I think A, the history that I'm finding is on the VA website, so I feel like it's always going to be a little biased,
Wikipedia.
but yeah, it's something I'm definitely going to dig into because I don't know the roots or the history of it, and you know, I know that when we're talking about vets and the different generations of vets and how they're treated, I mean, there's huge generational disconnect as it is just between the veterans that were World War II Vietnam veterans compared to today's veteran, right? It's
I
just a
believe that
different
that is
time.
by design. I believe that that is completely fictitious. Trauma is trauma. I don't care what dirt you were standing on when you experienced trauma. You're not broken. You just don't know how to feel. Like, we're not a generation of just a bunch of depressed, whiny babies. We're all coming online. We're all starting to feel, and we don't know what to do with it. Complete reform, not even reform, dismantle the VA and make something new. And a, what's the word? Like a changing of the principle, because it's in the treatment of veterans, or even when you're active duty, the bottom line is the dollar. When they say military grade, you shouldn't be like, oh, badass. You should be worried, because that means the lowest bidder on that contract made that item. And you cannot put a price tag on mental health. You can't. It cannot be boiled down to the dollar. It's so nuanced. You can't just treat symptoms. And that is what the VA does, is symptomatic treatment. You have to start treating the source. So if this new theoretical entity, post fighting time is set up and established to effectively treat the source of your traumas and not symptomatic treatment, where they'll dope you up into a zombie and have things like the veteran's breakfast, where it's 17 pills in the morning. I know that it's true, because I got put on antitrypsin when I was in the military. And then when I got out, I saw a psychiatrist, and he was like, what medication are you taking? I said, well, I was taking antitrypsin. He said, what? I said, antitrypsin. It's tricyclic. This was like before SSRIs even existed. He said, I haven't heard that term since medical school 20 years ago. And the reason they make that pill and push it is not because of its efficacy, it's because it's less than a penny per pill to make. So that means that the bottom line is not the veteran. It is not the life under that uniform. It is the cost of the uniform. The dollar is what it boils down to. How do you fix that? You just got to get the right people in position and hope they don't get corrupted, I guess. But I mean, you got to take out the incentivization of mental health care, of pushing particular medications and kickbacks. I mean, it would take reform of probably the entire medical system to really nail it down, but medicine is not a panacea to your problems. It is a hand up, not a hand out. It doesn't do the work for you. It's supposed to alleviate some of the symptoms while you put in the work to find your healing, whatever avenue that may be. And a lot of people misunderstand that. If they start teaching that, that might be one thing that could relieve some of the symptoms. Like, look, this Prozac that we're putting you on, it's not going to fix you, dog. It's going to make things a little better. Your ups and downs may not be so extreme, but they're still ups and downs, and you got to know how to deal with them. I think that, like, the fundamental principle of how we all look at it, again, shifting perspective.
Yeah, those are great suggestions. And I think that they're things that if the government and the military really wanted to, they could easily do something
Oh,
like
for
that. Maybe
sure.
easily isn't the right word because, you know, everything's always going to have its layers and its red tape. It's the government. But, you know, I always try to find these solutions through this podcast in hopes that someday, if someone is listening to this and they're like, oh, well, we hear all these stories and we hear all these things happening, but what's the solution? And I really do try to be solution oriented because I truly feel like there is something that could be done differently. You know,
There is.
we had the Brandon Act that just came out. That's great and all. I don't
I don't
think
even know
it's
what
the
that is.
solution. So the Brandon Act, I don't know if it applies to the entire military, just the Navy, but there was a sailor back in 20, I don't remember the exact year, 2019 maybe. He took his life by walking into helicopter blades, I want to say. I don't remember the
Wow.
exact story.
Holy shit.
Yeah, you have to be in an immense amount of pain mentally to do something like that. And it blows my mind that it wasn't a bigger deal in the news anyway. It was just kind of like,
That's what they want you to do, is be quiet about it.
I know.
That some accountability, that's another way to have an answer to these problems. You know, when you enlist, I'm sorry, please finish what you were saying.
Oh
I
no,
totally
you're
interrupted
good.
you.
You're good. I was just, I was touching on the Brandon Act, and I did do a story or a podcast episode on that story. And I encourage anyone listening to just look it up and figure out more about it anyway. And I haven't dug deep into it, but from what I understand, it just doesn't, the little bit that I read from what the Brandon Act is, it makes it sound like it's empowering a sailor or, service member to go get help. And from what I understood, it's placing a lot more responsibility onto the chain of command. Don't quote me on any of this, but it doesn't seem like it's something that's actually going to be effective. So.
Let me tell you something. I went to mental health after that. I was in a flying squadron. I felt good about going to mental health. I was like, you know what? I'm going in the right direction. I'm getting help. I made the first step. I'm walking out of that office. I didn't go in there and say anything crazy. I didn't go in there and say, I'm finna kill you and then I'm gonna kill me. I just said, I feel sad and I don't know why and I don't know what to do with it. I got into my car after the appointment. Put it in reverse. And before I put that car in drive, my NCOIC called me to inform me that I was indefinitely flight disqualified because of what happened at mental health. And then 4 months later, I was out of the military. So they can brand and act all they want. What they need to do is act right and take some accountability for their shortcomings. You know that you waiver your right to sue. Like you don't have you cannot sue the military because you've served. You waiver that when you enlist.
Yeah, I thought they were talking about a malpractice thing a few years back. I don't know if that ever manifested into anything, and I don't know the ins and outs of it, if it's like a civilian thing or a military thing. But I mean, at the end of the day, the military is a giant corporation, right? And it's like you said, when it comes to money, that is always going to be the number one thing, is the money part of it, because it's a business, it's a corporation, and every single person that serves is an asset to the military. And instead of looking at it like that, in a way where we want to preserve that asset, they are seeing the dollar amount. And so it really
Sure.
makes incredibly difficult to pass on things that might help to the people that are at the top, that have to talk to people who have no idea what the hell serving in the military is like. But everyone's making all these decisions and
It's
hoping that it looks good.
like, yeah, for a little bit of saving face for re-election. It's crazy to me that God, it's so overwhelming sometimes. It's like a bunch of bad Wall Street people, dude. Like Eisenhower tried to warn us about the coming military industrial complex, and here we are amidst a crisis of lives because we're assets, not people. But think about it. It's like bad business practice to make a shitload of investment into these people and then be like, oh, fuck it. Fuck it up. It's paid for. Like, I don't care. That doesn't make any sense. You want your investments to have a rate of return in perpetuity until they do not return anymore. So maybe investing into these people, even after their service, like truly investing into them so that when they do get out, they can go on to be the people that are the ones calling the shots of how to help people. But that's politics, and politics is a whole other beast. I mean, re-election and old blood being in the same office for
Oh,
an
yeah.
entire lifetime, you know what? That's a whole other reform that we would have to do. But think about this. If we were able to accomplish some reform on the scale of the VA and the military and then politics, like we could change the world step by step. We could change our country for the better. We could make America great again.
Oh shit.
All right, let me tie this up.
Kyrie
Let me
for
tie this up.
president.
Oh, dude, a lot of people would have to get real cool about a lot of stuff real quick for me to be a politician. I don't think that would fly. They'd be like, yeah, what
But
about
no,
this incident?
you make so many good points that I think in my mind it's like, oh, well, that's simple. All they have to do is this and that, and we could start those baby steps towards change. But when we're looking at the scale of what's being done, it's like, oh, well, first of all, the Brandon Act that I brought up, it took years for them to even get to where they got to. And a lot of people are raving about it, but I'm reading it and I'm like, what the fuck?
I
Like,
don't
this
rave
is
about
not.
that. He's still dead. That is a reactive measure and something we should be proactive about.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Prevent it in the first place.
But then, on the scale of knowing that it's probably still not going to change anything, I like to equate these programs to the SAPR program, right? We put the sexual assault prevention and response program in place, and
And MST has
I
been on the
know
rise.
very few people who have had a good experience with it.
Yeah.
A lot of people, it's like, okay, well, the people we're going to, they're in the command. So then when you're going to someone in your command and we equate the military to a high school, everyone's gonna know. And then, it's another rabbit hole, but there's so many parts to your story that we could chat about for hours and hours. And
Sure.
I encourage anyone listening to this episode to do more research on you as the guest is on you, because there is a lot of work that you've done and there's incredible things that you've been a part of. And I think that you've made such a positive impact on the world in the time that you have been alive. And I'm so glad and grateful that you are still here to be able to make that impact, because the world does need more people who care enough to save even one life. One life matters. And I think I've heard from other people in nonprofit spaces and veteran spaces, a lot of people get very much caught up in like the politics of it and the money side of it. And I think they forget at the end of the day why they do what they do. And so I'm grateful that you haven't forgot why you do what you do or why you've done what you've done. And so thank you for sharing everything that you've shared and for the work that you've done. And I'll pass it off to you to wrap up. And then I do want to hear from you what advice you would want to leave the listeners with.
You had me choking up for a minute. That was really sweet. That I appreciate you saying that so much. That means a lot, like more than you probably can even conceive to hear those words. It's just nice to hear.
Absolutely.
I guess a good tie off to everything, where we're at now. I mean, I spoke in DC in January as a keynote speaker. Me. Who the fuck am I to be in that position? If you look back to December 21st of 2020, having that gun in my mouth when I was a loser and a quitter and a thief and a liar, who the fuck am I to be in that position? And I'll tell you exactly who I am. I'm someone that was scared, but cast that fear aside to face these demons so that someone else down the line doesn't have to. Cycle breaking so that our future of humanity can be just a little bit better. I mean, I had somebody sitting right here that was a civilian say, like, I can't imagine the things you went through and the things you had to do. And I'm like, good, don't. I did it so you don't have to. And that's what needs to happen is we need cycle breakers to start turning around and facing those demons they're running from. Doing it with the support of their peers and the therapy and whatever else you need to make it through, because it's hard. It's hard. God, it's hard sometimes. But it's worth it. It's always worth it for even that one life. Had I been on this journey for 2.5 years and saved one life, I would do it again 1,000 times. BGMH has now been pulled out of operation as of April. We're still a 501c3. I still have everything in place legally, and I'm making moves for a new direction, which is to come, as I'm in talks with some executives here locally in Albany to make some big changes for veterans here, starting out here, that I want to build into a scalable model that can be worldwide, like VGMH was. The last thing that I would say is imperative is to be brave. And that doesn't mean don't have fear. Fear is an appropriate emotion. Fear is what keeps you alive. I've been scared in the military a lot of times. And in those scared moments, I'm still here and they aren't. Because in that scared moment, bravery is not the absence of fear. Bravery is the disregard of it. Have the courage to be brave for yourself, not for anyone else. Do it for you. Put yourself first. You're worth it. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve anything, but you're worthy of it. I would submit that almost all military members, people that have answered the call or even tried to, are on some level worthy. And they're worthy of love. They're worthy of feeling better. And they're worthy of being in a world where they're comfortable and they don't have to validate their existence, as we so often feel like we do. So just be brave. And in those times where you feel like you can't be brave, reach out. And I'm not saying reach out to the fucking VA hotline. If you got to use it, use it. There's so many resources out there. And my problem going into it was I didn't know where to look. There needs to be a repository of resources, a comprehensive repository, national and local. And I would shout out Combined Arms for doing exactly that. Veteran Help Point for doing exactly that. Just a resource hub. Peer-to-peer support saved my life. Having someone that cared more about my story. They would rather hear my story than hear my funeral. And that's the only reason I'm still here today. And for any listeners out there, my name is Kyrie. I am online on multiple mediums. If you want to ever reach out to me, I may not answer right away, but I will answer. Reach out to me, reach out to someone you know, and understand that they don't have to understand. It's just a matter of they care enough to hear it. Nobody's ever going to understand your trauma because it's yours. And that's your cross to carry. But be brave and be strong enough to carry it. And when you're not, have the courage to let somebody else help you carry that cross. Because that's okay. This do it all on your own mentality is ridiculous. We're meant to connect. We're creatures of connection. That's what human beings are. So connect and be brave.
And Kyrie, where can people find you if they want to reach out and connect?
LinkedIn is a good one. Kyrie J. Soraya on LinkedIn. Facebook is another one, but Facebook's kind of a nightmare. My inbox gets inundated with this is like Dicture City on Facebook. If you Google me, you could probably find me on some avenue somewhere. And I would throw my email out, but that would probably be a horrendous idea. I could, you know what I'll do? I'll say this right now. I will make a new email after this podcast called help at vgmhmission.org. If you need a hand or need some guidance or need some help, I'll do what I can. And if I can't do it, I know somebody who can. Please, my closing thought. Be brave and be brave enough to be the change. Don't stand idly by while things are in complete disarray. Be that person that changes the course of humanity for the better, for all of us, for me and for you, because we are each other. We're both made of matter. Your ears are my ears. And in at the end of this whole whatever life is meant to be, matter cannot be created nor destroyed. So we are matter, at least on a fundamental scientific level, meaning that we are connected on some way. So be that change. Start with baby steps. Take your whole strategy, break it down into objectives. Break those objectives down into I'm sorry, that's out of order. Take your goals, make some goals, big ass goals, shit that you can't even fathom how to do yet. And then break those down into strategy. And then break those strategies down into objectives. And then break those objectives into actionable items. And then every day you now have a list of something you can look at and be like, what do I want to do today? Well, we could do this, 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 or this. Each baby step is a step in the right direction. Peace is possible. I did it. And I found sobriety in my service to others. And I can't thank you enough for giving me the time of day to share my story. And hopefully, if one person out there takes something from it, then it was worth it because it's been a long day. And this was the highlight of my day so far.
Well, thank you. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show, and your story is so incredible. And I truly hope that people reach out and that, I know people are going to get value from this. So I'm not even going to say I hope because I already know. So make sure you go to LinkedIn. If you have a LinkedIn, give Kyrie a follow, connect. I don't know how you say that for LinkedIn. I haven't
Yeah,
been on
that's it.
LinkedIn a lot lately.
Yeah. If you're a
Yeah.
veteran and you don't have a LinkedIn, you're wrong.
Yeah, it's
Just...
a great place. I mean, the veteran community on there is phenomenal.
Yeah,
So,
it's great.
I really love that platform. But thank you, thank you, thank you again for being here. Thank you for taking the time. I very much appreciate you. Again, I appreciate the work you've done, and I so look forward to seeing what the future holds for you. And till next time.
Well, a little sneak peek. DC might be in my future here again in the near future. I won't say what, but we'll see.
I love it. I love it. We'll keep posted and we'll follow along.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters. Your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.